All right, Alexander, let's talk about the VP debate. Mike Pence definitely won this debate, without a doubt. It doesn't matter if you're right, left, or center. Even Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks in a tweet said that Mike Pence had won. It was a clear victory, wasn't it?
Absolutely, completely clear. And can I just say, when I got up this morning in London, I went to all the newspapers and things, and of course, they weren't talking about the actual debate. They were talking about a fly. And that immediately told me that the fact that they're talking about a fly is a sign that Mike Pence won. If it had been Kamala Harris, they wouldn't have been wasting their time with the fly. They would have been talking about Kamala Harris instead. So Mike Pence won. He is an extremely skilled debater. He had all his facts at his fingertips. He knows exactly how to express himself. He kept Kamala Harris not just at bay, but he took the attack back at her. I mean, she threw all kinds of punches at him, and he managed to parry them all, and he was back. And basically, it wasn't a smash out, but he nonetheless, I think, won and won comprehensively and convincingly. And I don't think anybody who isn't completely partisan and blind to reality would argue otherwise. I'm going to say one thing, and this is a point I do want to make. Once again, the moderator was unquestionably on Biden's, or on Kamala Harris's side. No question about this. Now, the result was that because Pence fought Kamala Harris, I mean, he outfought her on her own ground. But ultimately, because of the bias of the moderator, it was her ground. So if it had been a different kind of moderator, the Kamala Harris would have been much more on the defensive, and Pence would have been able to come at her on all kinds of points where she was weak. The fact that she basically wasn't able to parry Pence on arguments on what she was strong on shows you how she would have unraveled if the debate had been on points she was weak on. Now, that brings us to the fundamental problem with these debates. When Trump came up against Biden, he tried to get past that by basically taking over the debate, pushing Chris Wallace to one side, asking difficult questions about Biden's son, Hunter Biden, about all of those kind of things. Because Pence didn't do that to anything like the same degree, he wasn't ultimately, despite winning comprehensively, able to get that sort of blowout victory that he might have been able to get if this thing had been done in a more even-handed and balanced way. And let me just give some examples. You had Kamala Harris coming along once again, coming up with that nonsense about the Russians paying bounties to the Taliban to kill Americans in Afghanistan. That is a totally discredited story. It is an exploded story. A proper moderator would have said that. Would have said the Pentagon has denied it. And that would have thrown Harris completely on the defensive. A proper moderator would have said, let's discuss this court packing strategy that you're all embracing. And what would Kamala Harris have said to that? You can so easily see Pence coming in on that and attacking Kamala Harris on those sort of subjects. Instead, we have the whole discussion on, the pandemic and the response to the pandemic at the beginning. Notice how they're now moving away from BLM. They're talking about the pandemic instead because BLM was this huge disaster. Well, as I said, Pence actually did astonishingly well on that. He was able to turn the tables completely, but it was a counterattack done from a defensive position. It shows you, as I said, what an exceptional debater Pence is. It shows you what a weak debater Kamala Harris is. I would add, by the way, that maybe this is my own personal feelings. Again, Kamala Harris didn't come across as at all likable in any way to me. But had it been done differently, had the setup of this thing been done, been different, we would have had, well, definitely the same result. It would have been the same winner. But the outcome would have been, you know, absolutely, you know, baroque. It would have been absolutely magnificent and, you know, overwhelming in a way that, because of the way this thing was set up, it couldn't be. That's my overall view of it.
Yeah, for a politician, Kamala Harris has got no charisma. She's very unlikable for a politician. I've never really seen a politician that's so unlikable. And I also agree that the moderator probably benefited from the terrible job that Chris Wallace did, in that it didn't make her look as one-sided as she was. I mean, she was pulling for Kamala Harris, but because of Chris Wallace and the way he completely screwed up the first debate, it actually made her look, it made the moderator look more moderate and more balanced, even though she wasn't. Actually, the Rubin Report had like a very unscientific study where they said they were using their mobile phone, their iPhone, to time, to count all the times that the debaters would hit the 2-minute mark or before the 2-minute mark, and the moderator would interrupt them. And they counted for every, Mike Pence would get interrupted 5 times. When he would hit the 2-minute mark, Kamala Harris would get interrupted only 1 time when she would hit or pass the 2-minute mark. So it was pretty much a 5-to-1 difference. Pretty much Mike Pence was being told by the moderator, stop at 2 minutes, while Kamala was kind of let off the hook to just keep on rambling. And one other final point, and then you can get into it. You mentioned the court packing. I find it really, and the bounties, I find it really interesting and really disturbing, and I would like your explanation on this, that the Democrats can be so flippant about lies like Charlottesville or the bounties, stuff like that. They can just lie about that without any care in the world. But when it comes to taking a position on packing the court, we saw both from Biden and from Kamala Harris, they refuse to answer it. They don't lie, but they refuse to give an answer. Why is that? How come they just don't say no? I'm not going to pack the court, and then know that when they get elected, they will pack the court. Why is it at this instant, the court packing question, they're unable to let that lie out? What's the reasoning there?
Well, can I just answer your second point first? There is a very straightforward reason. If they said that they were not going to pack the court, they would infuriate and upset this vast army of angry people on the left who do want them to pack the court and who they absolutely need, because Biden and Harris are an unpopular duo with many people on the left, to come out and vote for them.
So progressives.
Exactly. So they don't want to demoralize and upset the progressives by ruling that out. At the same time, they can't admit that that's what they're going to do, because they know perfectly well that most of the American people don't want it. So they prefer to evade about this. But of course, it's a very dangerous evasion, because when you appease this, you know, angry progressive wing of your own party, and you refuse to rule out something as incendiary and revolutionary as that, then, of course, when the moment comes and they come to you when you're elected and demand it, what do you say? You can't rule it out by saying, well, when we won the election, we said we wouldn't do it, because you didn't say during the election that you wouldn't do it. So I think personally that they've given, you know, red meat to a wolf. And that wolf will come back for more. That's the nature of this. That is absolutely how this politics is working out. And I think this needs to be understood very clearly. I mean, given how essential the Supreme Court is to the political system of the United States, taking a firm and clear position on it should be absolutely essential. And by the way, coming back to your first question, it is disgraceful that Kamala Harris and Joe Biden are able to come along and say things which are, which they, you know, outright lies, things that are not true and are not called to account for it. And we saw it again in that debate, which has just happened between Kamala Harris and Pence. So they're not being examined and forensically pursued by the media for their lies, which they are lies, and they're not being forensically examined by the media on their evasions about the Supreme Court. Even though, for the United States, to be very clear about this, the Supreme Court is an existential issue. I know there are many people who are concerned, very, very angry and concerned about Roe and Wade. If you completely subvert the Supreme Court, Roe and Wade is the least of your problems. I mean, I know that may not be popular, may not be something some people want to hear, but it's true. Without a Supreme Court that has legitimacy and authority, the rest of the Constitution cannot function.
Yeah, God help us if Joe Biden wins the election and Kamala Harris becomes president of the United States. And I mean the way I'm saying it, if Joe Biden wins the election and Kamala Harris becomes president of the United States, it's crystal clear she is not mentally equipped to become president of the United States. She doesn't have the charisma to sit at a table with Xi or Putin or Merkel. Or Macron. She would not be capable to handle meetings with these people. And going off your point, God help America if Biden wins and Kamala Harris becomes president of the United States. Because Alexander, it's the filibuster is gone. The filibuster is gone. The Supreme Court is going to be packed.
Yes.
D.C. and Puerto Rico become states. So you get senators there. So in essence, the Senate is permanently Democrat, and they're going to do away with the Electoral College. I mean, I don't want to over-exaggerate things or get hyperbolic, but I mean, you are really looking at the end of the United States of America if these two people get elected.
Well, it's a revolutionary program which would be carried out by a president who was unpopular, had no mandate, because Kamala Harris would not have been elected as president of the United States. She would not have been the person that was, you know, on those ballot papers. Biden was, and it would have been a trick. It would have been a trick to sort of, you know, shoo her in, and she would not have a mandate to do these extraordinary things. And yet, that is the program that she is increasingly being, you know, adopting. That is the Democrat program. Do away the Electoral College, as you said, change the format, the shape of the Senate, change so much, you know, destabilize the Supreme Court of the United States. I cannot imagine a more dangerous situation where you have a president who has no mandate, no legitimacy, no popularity, pursuing a program like this. There would be a huge reaction across the country if she was to carry out a program of this nature. And bear in mind, this has come after 3.5 years of, you know, Russiagate and Ukrainegate and all that nonsense, which has already, I think, sapped a lot of people's confidence in the political system. And it's also happened during an election, which would have happened in a time of pandemic, when the rules of that election are being changed almost as we speak, you know, with mail-in ballots and all of that. So it would be seen by many, many people in the United States, not as, you know, the legitimate actions of an elected president, but as an absolutely sinister power grab carried out by a president who had not been properly elected.
Yeah, full agreement. Okay, let's shift gears just a little bit to the presidential debate. We have two more debates left. And we had some news earlier today that both parties, both camps, had agreed to a virtual debate. And they were going to do a virtual town hall, is what they called it. The moderator, this Scully guy, who used to work for Biden, by the way, would be in Miami. He would field questions from the audience, and Trump and Biden would be sitting in, I guess Trump would be in the White House, Biden would be in his basement, and they would be fielding these questions via Zoom. And that was the format that supposedly they agreed upon. But Trump went on Fox Business with Maria Bartiromo, and he told her that he'll pass on this debate. He said, quote, "We'll pass on this sad excuse to bail out Joe Biden and do a rally instead." He said, quote, "I'm not going to waste my time on a virtual debate." This is what he told Fox Business. He further said, "That's not what debating is all about. You sit behind a computer and do a debate. It's ridiculous," he said. "It's not acceptable to us." So he totally blew apart the news that they had agreed to a virtual debate. The Biden camp came in afterwards and said this new statement from the Biden campaign, quote, "Joe Biden will find an appropriate place to take questions from voters directly on October 15th. Given the president's refusal to participate on October 15th, we hope the debate commission will move the Biden-Trump town hall to October 27th. Finally, it looks like we have a resolution. It looks like we have a resolution. And this is what it looks like has been agreed upon. Trump is going to have a rally on the 15th. Biden is going to take questions probably from his basement via Zoom. Everything pre-scripted and pre-planned, whatever, on the 15th. They're going to do an in-person town hall debate on the 22nd. And they're going to do a final debate, a third debate, on the 29th. That is, I believe, is 4 days before the election. On the 29th will be the final debate. What do you make of all of this?
Well, I think Trump has actually, I think he's right to push it like this. I mean, can I say, you can have a virtual debate, but you can only have a virtual debate if you have an impartial moderator. If you don't have an impartial moderator, a virtual debate becomes extremely difficult, because bear in mind, the moderator can probably mute you. And that's one weapon which, you know, a moderator might easily use in this kind of situation. And it becomes much easier for the moderator, so-called moderator, to control the questions. Can I just make a point here? This has been the problem with both of the debates we've seen so far. It's more even than the conduct of the moderator during the debate. It is the way Chris Wallace and this other person, I'm sorry, I've forgotten her name, has chosen the subjects that are to be discussed. They always choose subjects that work in favor of Biden and Harris as opposed to Trump and Pence. Now, if you have this all done virtually, that puts the moderator in an even stronger position to do that. So I can understand completely why Trump said no. So what he's now managed is he's managed to blow that aside. There's going to be these debates on the 22nd and the 29th. And you're absolutely right. It's going to be left right up to 4 days before the election. And that is going to bring it right up to the wire. And that's going to be very dramatic. I mean, that's going to be one of the most extraordinary situations we've ever seen in a presidential election up to now. And more to the point, because it will be just 4 days before the election, I predict there will be even more interest in this debate than there usually is. You're going to see millions upon millions of Americans actually switching on to watch it.
I wonder whose vote you sway so close to the election. Like, what's the type of person that can be swayed 3-4 days before?
There are always people. This is where, you know, I've been involved in elections many, many times. I mean, my aunt was obviously involved in elections. There are people, there's a churn in elections. People are constantly changing their minds. Lots of people are waiting almost until the last moment. They're trying to make up the way, you know, which way they're going to vote and things like that. It's a complete misconception that voters, all the voters, have long since made up their minds before an election takes place. What happens at the end can be decisive. I mean, I'll give you an example, a well-known example, which happened in the early 2000s. There was an election in Spain. The Conservative Party, which was led by a man called Aznar, was expected to win. Then there were certain terrorist attacks in various parts of Spain. I think 48 hours before the election took place, Aznar said that the bombs were the work of the Basque separatist movement, the socialists, who were the opposing party, challenged that, said that it was Islamist radicals. Turned out the socialists were right, and they won an unexpected election victory. So it changed completely the balance of the election right at the very last moment. And Aznar and the Conservatives, right up until that moment, had been expected to win. So it shows you that events at the very end of an election can be decisive.
Wow. It's an incredible turn of events.
No, absolutely. Right. And I think, by the way, Trump, again, knows what he's doing. And I think he's worked this out very carefully and thought it through very well. I think the Biden people, it's interesting. I wonder why they agreed to this, because from their point of view, I don't think it's a good idea.
Why do you say that? Why do you think Trump has an advantage so close to the election to have a debate in Biden?
Because he's the kind of person who thrives on the adrenaline of events, whereas Biden, comes across to me as somebody who gets more stressed as debates and events move on. If you remember, when we discussed the previous debate between Trump and Biden, we said that Biden got as good as he would ever be in that first debate, and leaving his weakest performance to the very last one, I think is risky, that's putting it mildly. By contrast, I think Trump, who will be campaigning more actively between now and then, and will be, you know, closer to his voters, and who's also, you know, constantly, he's a person who learns. I mean, he learned during 2016. I mean, he was improving as the debates in 2016 were happening. I think he will be at the top of his game in that debate. So we'll see.
We will see for sure. It's going to be an incredible next 2-3 weeks. An incredible 2 weeks. All right. We'll leave it there. Alexander Barrett-Curtis, thank you very much. Guys, please click on that like. Drop us a comment down below. Let us know what you think about the new debate schedule in the comments section. Also, please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation helps keep this channel going. And also go to the Durant Shop and pick up some merchandise. I hear some mugs there in the background, Alexander.
You certainly do. Here is a mug with a flag of the United States, which is the Great Republic, which is currently holding the election. And it is a magnificent magic mug, the best magic mugs in the world. And it is beautified tremendously by having on it the flag of the United States, the Great Republic, which was conceived in liberty, to use Abraham Lincoln's words, and we're proud to have it on our mugs. We've also got, of course, lots of other countries, flags of other countries on our mugs. This is Australia, another country, an English-speaking nation very close to us in Britain, and here indeed is Britain. So we have all the Anglophone countries here, Britain, well, not all of them. We've got Canada, I think Alex has, but we don't, of course, just have countries, Anglophone countries. This is Greece, and this is Germany. This is an enameled mug that you can see. This is England. So we have lots of countries. And in fact, if you go to our shop, you will find the flags of many countries on our shop, on our mugs. And of course, they're expanding all the time. We're getting more and more flags. We're also getting flags of individual states of the United States. I know we have one with Texas, and more are coming. And of course, we also have flags on our shirts too. You can see there's the flag of Australia on one of the t-shirt I'm wearing now. Our amazing, beautiful 100% cotton t-shirts. They come long-sleeved or short-sleeved, as this one is. And we've got amazing polo shirts. And we've also got flags on our hats. And you can see this is the flag of the United Kingdom of Great Britain, the country where I live and of which I'm proud to be a citizen. And it's in a beautiful embroidered hat. I've also got another hat with another British flag there. And by the way, you can also find lots of flags. There's Switzerland, and you will find, again, lots of flags. There's a beautiful, you can see how beautiful hats they are. how beautifully embroidered they are. They're just amazing hats. We got, and Poland, there's Poland, another country, by the way, that I am I have a strong love and affection for. And so, you know, we've got our flags on our hats, and we've also got amazing hoodies, and we've got amazing ebooks. We've got all these wonderful things in our shop. You can come to our shop, support our, the Duran, get one of our amazing items with the flag, either of your, well, of your own country and of any other country that you feel an affinity and liking for, or maybe you just like the flag of that country. You can get them all from our shop. And you can support the Duran too. So come to our shop, support the Duran, get these amazing things from our shop. Alex will quickly remind you how to do it.
Just go to the duranshop.com. You'll find the link in the description box down below. Alexander McCurry, thank you very much. Take care, everybody.